Thank you for joining me. I'm Bob Franklin, and you're listening to the Public Affairs Program, Like It Is. Gerald Davis is the guest today. He'll be speaking about African-American ministers' preaching styles. This encore edition of the program was facilitated by Steve Spencer.
Gerald Davis, who is an African-American folklorist and the chair of Africana Studies at Rutgers University. He's also an associate professor at Rutgers. He's here on Maryland's Eastern Shore this week to deliver an address at Salisbury State University. Can you tell us something about the address, Mr. Davis?
Yes, I've been invited to share some thoughts on African-American preaching, the art and the craft of the preacher. It's some work I did some years ago and published in a book, and I'm also here to, I think, just to join classes to share whatever information I have on aspects of African-American folklore and creativity.
In terms of the different styles of preaching, can you talk a little about the styles of preaching as you understand them?
I'm particularly interested in, I guess, the charismatic style, the affective style, the style that some people call the hooping and hollering. I tend not to like that particular term since it has such a pejorative connotation. My study, of course, has revealed that African-American preaching, the kind that we find by charismatic preachers in churches like the Baptist churches, the Church of God in Christ, is that it's a highly complex form, structurally, and I've been able to isolate various elements and distinctive features of African-American preaching, and when taken together, I think, make it as strong a narrative performance as one is apt to find anywhere in African-American culture and African-American invention, one that should be taken quite seriously, far more than it is taken seriously by popular culture.
But there are different styles, despite your focus on this one charismatic style, as you're talking about that. How, the more academic term, I suppose, do you compare and contrast?
Well, I mean, certainly you have those ministers who speak from prepared texts, but they aren't called preachers very often, at least by African Americans, and you have those preachers who combine prepared text with seemingly extemporaneous speaking, and then you have those preachers who seem to speak exclusively extemporaneously, seemingly spontaneously. Of course, they aren't speaking spontaneously at all since they're using a structure that's been codified historically by African Americans for at least 200 or 300 years in this country, and may even have a provenance in Africa. I suppose African American theologians have more elegant names for these styles, these types of public address in the church that I've identified. But I think many African Americans, at least, would recognize that those three forms identified, and they may be attached to churches which have a particular need to maintain certain status relationships within the African American community. Certainly, the Episcopalian Church in which I was raised, you would have a minister who speaks exclusively from a prepared text.
But when you talk about the prepared text style, you took a moment and said that they wouldn't be referred to as preachers.
No, preaching refers to a sort of animated form that pulls on the features one commonly identifies as African American. You use the voice as an instrument. You tell stories. For instance, there's the use of the first person quite heavily. One scholar calls it the intrusive eye, which is a common feature throughout African American urban narrative. You might have instantaneous references to something going on in the church, something going on in the community. A preacher might weave in a joke, a folk tale. It's a seemingly spontaneous structure which a preacher uses, far more dynamic than a preacher who speaks from a prepared text, a text that may even go so far as to indicate pauses, as some preachers do. Preaching certainly refers to a kind of oratory. That's a rich, complex oratory that isn't often associated with people who speak from a prepared text, which can be a fairly spare emotional experience. I mean, you have brilliant readers, of course, but I mean, generally preaching. This activity I call preaching tends to refer to a more seemingly spontaneous form.
And those others, therefore, you would simply refer to as ministers or pastors, etc.
That's
now, in terms of the styles that you were delineating...
Because I'm arguing about that for people, but anyway, that's good.
But in terms of the styles that you were delineating just a moment ago, can you, in the context of those who are less familiar, I would dare say almost anybody is familiar with, even if you've never been into an African-American church of any denomination, certainly there are those who are familiar with the styles of preaching that transcend the church, the styles of Martin Luther King and the styles of the Reverend Jesse Jackson, etc. Would you use any particular examples that would be known in the world at large that people could associate with some of these different styles?
Obviously, the most popular representative form would be King's "I Have a Dream" speech, which he performed at the March on Washington.
I still have a dream. It is a dream deeply rooted in the American dream. I have a dream that one day this nation will rise up and live out the true meaning of its creed. We hold these truths to be self-evident that all men are created equal. I have a dream that one day on the red hills of Georgia, the sons of former slaves and the sons of former slave owners will be able to sit down together at the table of brotherhood. I have a dream that one day, even the state of Mississippi, a state sweltering with the heat of injustice, sweltering with the heat of oppression, will be transformed into an oasis of freedom and justice. I have a dream that my four little children will one day live in a nation where they will not be judged by the color of their skin, but by the content of their character. I have a dream today. A dream that one day down in Alabama, with its vicious racists, with its governor having his lips dripping with the words of interposition and nullification, one day right there in Alabama, little black boys and black girls will be able to join hands with little white boys and white girls as sisters and brothers. I have a dream today. A dream that one day every valley shall be exalted, and every hill and mountain shall be made low, the rough places will be made plain, and the crooked places will be made straight, and the glory of the Lord shall be revealed, and all flesh shall see it together. This is our hope. This is the faith that I go back to the South with. With this faith, we will be able to hew out of the mountain of despair a stone of hope. With this faith, we will be able to transform the jangling discords of our nation into a beautiful symphony of brotherhood. With this faith, we will be able to work together, to pray together, to struggle together, to go to jail together, to stand up for freedom together, knowing that we will be free one day. This will be the day when all of God's children be able to sing with new meaning, "My country, 'tis of thee." Sweet land of liberty, of thee I sing. land where my fathers died, land of the pilgrim's pride. From every mountainside, let freedom ring, and if America is to be a great nation, this must become true. So let freedom ring from the prodigious hilltops of New Hampshire. Let freedom ring from the mighty mountains of New York. Let freedom ring from the heightening Alleghenies of Pennsylvania. Let freedom ring from the snow-capped Rockies of Colorado. Let freedom ring from the curvaceous slopes of California. But not only that.
When King spoke about the America writing a check, and that check came back with marked insufficient funds to suggest the bankrupt nature of American democracy. What he was suggesting, of course, was that not only is America bankrupt in terms of its commitment to ensuring to all of its citizens a civil right, but he's also suggesting that there's a moral problem in America, and that the larger problem is solving the issue of race, or the issues of race. And that's the kind of tension that pulls throughout the African American sermon.
When you talk about the seemingly extemporaneous style, for example, it's almost difficult to describe it quite as a speech, although of course it was, because I don't think that I've ever had to form the words to speak about it, except to refer to it as the "I Have a Dream." I guess I've said the words "I Have a Dream" speech, but I've never talked about it by putting the word "speech" before it, and all of a sudden it sounded wrong, because the whole notion of it in the context of our talk here is obviously that connotes more the sermon than anything else. But what I'm interested, what I'm fascinated by, is the suggestion that, in fact, and do we know this for a fact, that a lot of what was discussed during the "I Have a Dream" speech was actually extemporaneous. Do we know how much notes he was working from? Do we know if this was written out in advance? Do you know that?
We know it wasn't. It was not written out in advance. My guess is, because King was that sort of person, he certainly had thought about what it is he wanted to say, and I'm sure he had in mind the general outline of his speech, of his sermon, and he may even have given some thought approaching the podium, that he was going to incorporate elements 1, 2, 3, 4, 4, and 5. But my sense is the actual construction, the actual assembly of the elements sort of took place almost on the spot. I mean, one of the things that preachers know is this structure. All preachers use a similar structure, and they fit into that structure.
Is that leading out of the King speech, is that, in fact, typical of most of this charismatic preaching that you're talking about?
And also, I mean, it's no wonder, no secret, that many of the politicians in our community are, in fact, people who are from the church, who know the church well. That's men or women. And when Barbara Jordan speaks, for instance, one has a sense of the church, both in her manner of speaking, but in the way she crafts her speech, her political message. Certainly, Adam Clayton Powell was a minister. Jesse Jackson is a minister, and I'm going to mention this evening his speech before the Democratic National Convention, which was itself memorable. But it was historical because he started out using a kind of nondescript American political style. I mean, he was a presidential candidate after all. But then, I think all of us remember quite painfully that at some point something wasn't working for him. He was losing his way, he was fumbling, and then you could almost see his face. He decided to, in fact, preach. And at that point, that whole assembly, and anyone watching on TV, became pulled into a sense. People started crying, people started applauding. It was a wonderful sort of magical moment. And at that point,
we come together, bound by our faith in a mighty God, with genuine respect and love for our country, and inheriting the legacy of a great party. The Democratic Party, which is the best hope for redirecting our nation on a more humane, just, and peaceful course. This is not a perfect party, We are not a perfect people, yet we are called to a perfect mission. Our mission to feed the hungry. As I leave you now, we vote in this convention and get ready to go back across this nation in a couple of days. In this campaign, I tried to be faithful to my promise. I lived in El Barrios, ghettos, Indian reservations, and housing projects. I had a message for our youth. I challenged them to put hope in their brains and not dope in their veins. I told them that like Jesus, I too was born in the slum. But just because you're born in the slum does not mean the slum is born in you. And you can rise above it if your mind is made up. I told them, in every slum, there are two sides. When I see a broken window, that's the slummy side. Train some youth to become a glazer, that's the sunny side. When I see a missing brick, that's the slummy side. Let that child in the union and become a brick mason and build, that's the sunny side. When I see a missing door, that's the slummy side. Train some youth to become a carpenter, that's the sunny side. When I see the vulgar words and hieroglyphics of destitution on the walls, that's the slummy side. Train some youth to become a painter, an artist. That's the sunny side. We leave this place looking for the sunny side because there's a brighter side somewhere. I'm more convinced than ever that we can win. We have fought up the rough side of the mountain. We can win. I just want young America to do me one favor. Just one favor. Exercise the right to dream. You must face reality, that which is, but then dream of the reality that ought to be, that must be. Live beyond the pain of reality with the dream of a bright tomorrow. Use hope and imagination as weapons of survival and progress.
Styles, and I was asking about examples that typify. We've spoken mostly about this charismatic style that you're focusing on, and the style that you say certainly would be typified perhaps by a Dr. King. Mm-hmm. But the other styles that you mentioned, three,
yeah.
Can you find examples specifically that many people could relate to, where we would have some image in our minds of what type of style that connects with?
I'm trying to associate the ministerial. Let's see. Well, the preacher who uses a prepared text, who writes his or her sermon on paper to be delivered as a prepared text, may not be unlike any other preacher in any other church, even a Catholic church, for instance. Even though Catholics these days, and some Catholics in some districts, are appropriating the charismatic style here in Louisiana, particularly, but those preachers are very much like preachers in any regular Sunday morning pulpit. It's a fairly straight. It can be a fairly flat. It can be animated delivery of the idea they have in mind. And in that sense, anyone who goes to church probably knows that experience. The more transitional type, the second type, which is of interest to me, is a person who may have a prepared text and who abandons the text at some point and goes on extemporaneously, then comes back to the text for his next point, then goes on and elaborates on that idea. Now, that person, You know, it happens frequently. Some of the TV evangelists do that sort of thing, although they're far more mindful of the amount of time they have than others. But you see a person, Shuler does it, I think, a bit. He comes in with a prepared text and seems to leave that text. I don't know if he's reading from a teleprompter or not, but he seems to leave the text, and then he comes back to it. Quite noticeably, he'll look down at what one presumes is a piece of paper or pieces of paper, and go on from there. I guess those are probably the examples I would have in mind.
In terms of these different forms, I'm also interested in, especially in terms of the U.S., the differences in style that you might note between, say, a southern style of preaching and a northern style of preaching. Do you note that there are particular... is there something particularly unique about the southern style versus the northern style? Are there, in fact, those delineations, or does that have more to do with just where you are in a particular part of the country, be it an urban environment, a rural environment, etc.?
Great question. The style that I'm speaking of, the style that I've looked at, I found all over the United States, whether it's in California, New York, Nashville, Tampa, for instance, places I've gone to listen to African-American preaching. The preaching style that I'm speaking of is quite common. There may be regional differences in terms of the references, but the structure itself, the structure I'm interested in, seems to hold true wherever there are African-American churches. Now, that shouldn't be surprising, since many African-Americans have migrated from the South to these areas of the country, and people carry with them their culture. The only noticeable differences might be the language uses and intonation, but the kind of preaching I'm talking about is quite common to all regions of the country.
I assume that these styles, talking about migrations, have also gone into further north than the U.S. into Canada as well.
It may very well have. I've not been to Canada, but as you know, there are large numbers of communities of persons who have come both from the United States northward, and also people who've come from Africa and the Caribbean and settled in Canada. Mm-hmm. So indeed, we might very well find the style there as well. And in Southern Africa, by the way, I've just discovered, because African American missionaries have been in Southern Africa for 100 years or so. Yeah.
Could you delineate in a relatively short fashion what you would consider to be the components of a successful sermon, of a successful preaching?
Sure. A successful African-American sermon has, there's a whole performance, actually, structure, but I'll say the sermon has at least three or four separate units. And those units may, in fact, seem to be mini-narratives themselves. They may be little stories within a larger sermon. The example might be King's handling of boys and girls walking hand in hand as one. Another was the bounce check metaphor, and there's several others. Now, they're held together by what I call thematic bridges. In this case, would be the I have a dream, that one day, and I have a dream. And that I have a dream connected each of these separate narrative units, and the result is seemingly a unified structure. Internally, each one of these units has to move between this tension, as I spoke of, this concrete secular example and the ideal Christian, the abstract Christian religious nature, and that tension operates almost horizontally and vertically, if you can think of it. And it's not linear. I don't mean to suggest that it is linear. You have the same large tension established and regulating the whole rhythm of the piece. The sermon usually begins in this abstract ideal and moves progressively through the concrete secular example, so that by the end, the person is able to take away into her or his life, into the next week, some set of rules, an example by which to live until the next time people meet again in church.
Special thanks to Steve Spencer and our guest, Gerald Davis of Rutgers University. I hope you enjoy this encore production of our program. I'm Bob Franklin. I'll be leaving you with an excerpt from a sermon by Reverend Lawrence Campbell. I'll be back next week with 30 more minutes of good conversation on another edition of Like It Is.
Someone wrote a song and said that God can do anything but fail. Many times when we sing that song, I believe that we don't really believe it as the songwriter intended that song to be taken. For I believe that God can do anything. Who is Mayor Stinson in the eyes of God? Mayor Stinson was made from the dust of the earth and shaped, and God blew the breath of life into his nostrils, and old Stinson became a living soul. God is able to trouble this man while he lies upon his bed of rest. God is able to trouble him so forcefully and disturb the consciousness of his thinking until when he gets down to his office and he intends to make an unjust law, God is able to change him in until he will make a just law. I believe that God can do anything but fail. I reminded of a few scriptures, and one in particular, when there was a man by the name of King Nebuchadnezzar, as he lied upon his bed of rest. And as he was sleeping, God troubled him in his mind. And I believe that God works in mysterious ways and wonders to perform. God has a hand in this society of ours, even though we cannot recognize the hand of God. But I believe God is moving. How do you know, Elder Campbell, that God is moving in the city of Danville? I have seen the Danville Christian Progressive Association.
Native Voice One, the Native American Radio Network.